and as much. He had rid himself of the last man to hold the commander's position, irritated by his constant insistence on questioning his decisions. This one had a reputation for complying with orders, a quaint but otherwise praiseworthy approach to the concept of chain of command. He sighed. What did the scar intend? Advancing as they had to the banks of the Myrmidon revealed they were up to something. But a force of less than 1,000 was too small to risk exposing itself to the much larger Federation army, a force that could crush it like an eggshell if its full strength were brought to bear. Surely the princess and her commanders must know that. So what were they doing? "Commander," he said without turning, "what do you make of this?"
"I don't think we should sit around waiting to see how it turns out," was his immediate response.
Dresch was a big bearded man with his best years still ahead of him, his loyalty long since established and his bravery unquestioned. He had experience on the battlefield. He had put down a dwarf uprising in the Declan mining region 5 years earlier. His sole weakness was his tendency toward caution. But caution wasn't always a bad idea.
"Would this scar princess really dare to turn on us?"
Vows shook his head.
"It would be foolhardy to risk doing so. We have been offered an agreement, an alliance of non-aggression. Would she choose to go back on her promise to let the Federation be? What would persuade her to change her mind?"
"Greed. Hunger for more than she already has. Who knows?"
Dresch paused.
"Have you received any communication since the offer was made? Perhaps it has been withdrawn."
Vows wasn't sure, but for him to assume it was no longer on the table didn't seem wise.
"We must take steps to see that she behaves herself. Take 2 companies of Federation Army regulars and a warship escort to the Myrmidon today, and have them camp directly across the river from the Scar. I want you with them to observe. Get word back to us if any attempt is made to cross the Myrmidon into the borderlands. Do it now."
His first commander nodded and left without a word. Vows went back to staring out the window. He would give this a few days, just to see if the princess or her envoy made any further attempt to contact him. If they did not, he would send someone to confront her. Whatever was going on, he wanted to know the details. This whole business with a scar was making him increasingly uncomfortable. He was beginning to think they could prove to be more trouble than the druids they had somehow dispatched. If that feeling persisted, he would have to do something about it, and do it soon. 12. Clesia Porse had continued on with a trading caravan to Varfleet, following her discovery that she had somehow failed to gain possession of the Black Elfstone, that she did not have the talisman she needed to bring Paranor back into the world of the Four Lands was galling enough. The fact that in all probability it was still inside the keep, where Driska, if he was still alive, could lay hands on it, put her at a decided disadvantage. So for the day following her unpleasant discovery, as she walked beside and sometimes rode within the caravan wagons, she puzzled over what to do. By the following morning, on arriving at their destination, she still did not have an answer. Her choices were admittedly unattractive. Because she had left Driska's scry orb behind, she had some connection with Paranor, however tenuous. Her decision on the matter had been deliberate and purposeful. Should Driska somehow survive the keep's guardian, unlikely as that seemed, she would want to know. The orb would provide her with a way. But now matters had moved beyond simply satisfying her curiosity. Now it appeared that her only chance for recovering Paranor lay in Driska having succeeded in doing what she had intended he not do, avoid the death she had so cleverly arranged for him. And if he was still alive, she needed to not only confirm it, but also learn whether or not he actually had possession of the Black Elfstone. Just at the moment she could not think of a way to proceed without tossing everything up in the air. She needed to be certain if he was alive, but without giving anything away about the Elfstone. If she found he was unaware of the truth and she left him that way, he would eventually die, which would be the simplest outcome. But then Paranor and all its vast and treasured magic would be lost to her and her plans to rebuild a new druid order severely compromised. If, on the other hand, she told him the truth, how could she do so in a way that would further her own interests, yet not put her in danger. So which way should she jump? The answer to this conundrum eluded her, so instead she quit thinking about it and went off to find an airship. That she would stay only a short time in Varfleet was a given. What she needed to do was travel west, to the village of Emberon and Driska Ark's home, to find those books of magic he had purloined on leaving. Yes, they were technically his, but the work had been done while he was a druid at Paranor, and so should belong to the druids. And since she was the sole survivor of the old order, and in the process of forming a new one, they should be hers. That Driska would never return to make use of them personally only strengthened the case for making them hers and finding a way to put them to use. She had no regrets about what she had done to him, just as she had no regrets about how she had manipulated Oba Balron and Ruiz Quince and all the other druids to arrange for their demise, nor did she have regrets about how she had betrayed Paranor to the Scar, so that she could form a new druid order and begin a new era in the history of the druids. To her way of thinking, it was a necessary sacrifice. To make a new start, you had to first put the past behind you. The members of the druid order were irrelevant and divisive. They had lost their bearing and diminished their ability to impact the future. Increasingly, they were becoming dangerous in their blindness. She might have saved them had they chosen her as High Druid rather than Balronan, but you lived with your mistakes in this world, and she had done nothing more than give a nudge to what was certain to happen eventually. For Clesia Porse, everything was expendable in the quest to achieve her desires. So once she had secured and provisioned an airship, she departed the city and set out for the Westland. A 3-day journey lay ahead, though at her age she required little sleep and could probably be in Emberon in 2 more days if she drove herself hard. It was a small concession to discomfort, given what she hoped to achieve. She could have secured the services of a pilot and avoided expending the energy to navigate and fly the airship on her own, but then she would have had to decide what to do with him afterward. And there was only one acceptable choice given her determination to keep her movements secret. Besides, she was a passable flyer with years of experience, even if most of those years were in the past. So she opted to keep herself to herself for now. And she believed the time spent flying alone would provide her with a chance to think through her plans and divine the means for carrying them out. There was much to consider, and it would be best accomplished if she was left undisturbed. One of the more intriguing prospects she found herself considering for the second time since leaving Lost Paranor centred on what use she might make of the mysterious girl Tarsha, who had accompanied Driska that first visit when he had sought to gain an audience with Oba Balronan. A student he was mentoring, the druid claimed, seemingly a young girl with no visible talent and no skills worth mentioning, his tone had suggested. But Driska did not waste time on those lacking ability to employ magic, and she sensed there was something more to this Tarsha than what the druid had suggested. There was an air of secrecy about her, revealed not by any obvious deception, but by her presence alone. And from the way she had looked at Clesia, from the caution and wariness she had displayed, she was clearly more than she appeared. Clesia Porse was very good at reading people. She prided herself on being able to see right through anyone. Tarsha was a book, waiting to be read, and if she was still in residence at Driska's cottage in Emberon, there would be a chance to do so. For now, Clesia could enjoy anticipating what truths might then be revealed, and how she might somehow prove useful for what lay ahead. She arrived in Emberon close to sunset on the 3rd day of travel, weary and hungry to get on with things. She brought the airship down in a landing field occupied by less than 6 other vessels, all worn and ragged and looking decidedly unsafe. Her ship was not new either, but it was well maintained and fully provisioned. She left it under the care of the field manager, a man who seemed willing enough to look after it, especially after she promised him a sizable bonus if she found her craft to be in the same condition when she departed as it was now. A more extensive inquiry into the location of Driska's home than she had anticipated proved necessary. It appeared that it had been burned to the ground some weeks earlier, and a number of brigands had paid the ultimate price for doing so. Informed that he had found temporary lodgings, she set out to find them, carrying a sack filled with food and clothing, a black-cloaked wraith bent and gnarled and unapproachable. She found the new home dark and silent amid other similarly shadow-bound residences, its bulk hunkered down within a heavy screen of trees and noticeably set apart. A brief scan with her magic revealed no one waited within. She climbed the porch steps, opened the locked door with ease, and entered. She'd hoped to find the girl still in residence, assuming she hadn't been scared off, but it appeared no one had been there for at least several days. There were clothes in a back bedroom that might have been Tasha's, but no other trace of her presence. She undertook a cursory search, but she did not waste her time trying to discover where the books of magic might be hidden, saving that for when she was better rested. Then she ate her dinner by candlelight and went to bed. When morning came, she rose, washed and dressed, ate her breakfast, and began her search for the books in earnest. Whatever else he had lost in the fire that had destroyed his earlier home, he would have made certain to protect those books. She went from room to room, a determined huntress, beginning with Driska's sleeping quarters and using her magic to aid her in her search. She took her time, considering every possibility as she went, her sharp old eyes missing nothing. She rummaged through all the drawers and closets, hunting under and behind furniture, moving quite deliberately from one room to the next. Afterward, she went on to consider what might be under the home or in the attic above. She searched every place she could think of, no matter how far-fetched, but turned up nothing. The day was nearly done when she finished, and she had nothing to show for her efforts. It was disappointing, but she was not discouraged. She had never once believed that finding something of such importance would be easy. Driska was nothing if not clever, and he would have been more so concealing those books. Toward evening, an oddity surfaced, one she could not explain. Glancing haphazardly into the trees surrounding the cottage, she caught sight of movement. It was gone as fast as it came, but she thought, from the glimpse she caught, that it might be human. She saw it again a little later, no clearer than before. Who or what was out there, or what its purpose might be in prowling about, remained a mystery. She thought to lie in wait for it, or track it, or even set a trap. But that seemed a foolish waste of her time, given what little she was apt to discover. Lingering at the periphery of her expectations was the faint hope that Tasha might appear. But still there was no sign of her. Clizia Porse was determined and strong-minded, but she was also very old and tired more easily than she once had. As a result, she began to wonder if she should abandon this effort and go in search of something more productive. The books would be useful, but forming alliances with those who might support her in establishing her new druid order was important too. Quite possibly, she began to think, it might be the better choice. And then abruptly, on that same evening, everything changed. Tasha Kanin was hot and feverish by the time she arrived back in Emberon, only barely able to land her airship, coming in too fast and hard and skewing the vessel sideways as she set it down. Her knife wound was badly infected, and her efforts to cure the infection had failed miserably. Her arm and shoulder had been swollen and painful for the last 2 days, the wound festering and leaking fluids, her head pounding with her sickness. She managed a quick hello for the field manager as she stumbled past, leaving the two men for him to put away, wanting only to reach Driska's cottage and go to bed. She had no idea if he would be there, but at this point it didn't matter. She would have a decent, warm bed to sleep in, food and drink to consume, and a guarantee of safety for at least one night. There were some medicines waiting, some of which would help her, and if she weren't better by morning, she would go to the village healer. She trudged into Emberon and up the roadway toward her destination, paying almost no attention to anyone around her, head down and body hunched in an effort to lessen her agony. It seemed apparent that the grime-encrusted knife blade had done its job. It all seemed a very long time ago, and she didn't care to think on it. Even Tavo seemed far in the past, and just then she found she didn't care if he was still coming to Emberon or not. Simply recovering from her wound would take all the strength she had left. She had just come in sight of the cottage when she saw the cloaked figure sitting on the porch, and felt a surge of relief and joy. Driska had returned from Paranor, and now everything would be all right. Except it wasn't Driska. She knew it almost at once, and as she drew nearer, it became clear the occupant of the chair was Plaisir Porse. Tasha felt a sinking in her stomach, but there was no help for it now. She was too close to turn aside, even had she wished to, and given her present condition it made no sense to go anywhere else. She watched the old woman rise and pull back the hood of her cloak, revealing her sharp old features, a pinched and wrinkled image still all too familiar from their last encounter. "Tasha, isn't it?" she said. "Do I have it right?" Tasha nodded, irritated. "Where is Drisker?" Clesia Porse pursed her lips. "I'm not sure. I left him at Paranor, assuming he was on his way out. I came here to find him. I thought he might be waiting, but he isn't." She paused. "I thought I might find you, too."
Tasha shook her head. "I went back home to see my family."
She dropped her backpack, suddenly unable to hold it any longer.
"I need to sleep." "Your bed is waiting. Your room is ready. I have not disturbed either. Would you eat first?"
"No, I just need to sleep."
She took two steps and dropped to one knee, the strength gone out of her. Instantly, Clesia Porse was beside her, arms about her waist, helping to hold her up as she guided her inside.
"You've been hurt, girl. I can smell the infection. We have to get you treated at once."
Tasha shook her head stubbornly.
"The village healer knows not a tenth of what I do. I can help you far more than anyone else. Now, come inside."
The old woman was far stronger than expected, and Tasha let herself be led to the bedroom and put into the bed. Without asking permission, Clesia began to remove her clothing so she could get a look at the wound. When she had Tasha stripped to the waist and the infected wound was revealed, she made a disparaging sound.
"You've let this go far too long. It needs cleaning, medication, and binding anew. A knife wound, it appears. Wait here."
Tasha closed her eyes, and it seemed only seconds later that she felt hands on her shoulders. Clesia was holding a cup of steaming liquid in front of her face.
"Drink this, all the way down. It will help with the pain. It will also help you to sleep when I'm finished."
The girl drank the bitter, pungent brew without objection, no longer wanting anything but to be cared for. The druid took the empty cup, set it aside, and began to clean out the wound. The pain was excruciating, but Tasha said nothing, determined to keep her feelings to herself. She remembered how Clesia Porse had made her feel during their meeting at Paranor, exposed, uncomfortable, at risk. Even Drisker had been wary of her, warning Tasha to reveal nothing, to keep her own counsel. She would do so here. When the wound was washed clean of infection and blood, the old woman applied a poultice and then wrapped it with a bandage that felt snug, without applying too much pressure. "It should be left open to drain at present," she advised. Tomorrow she would stitch it up and reapply the bandage. By now Tasha was almost asleep. She stayed awake only by telling herself she must know everything that was happening while Clesia Porse was in her bedroom. So she fought sleep just long enough for the old woman to complete the treatment and rise from beside her.
"You rest now," the other said. "We will talk in the morning. I will keep watch and wake you if there is need. Sleep."
And Tasha did. She dreamed of nothing at all. When she woke, it was light out again, the midday sun high overhead, the birdsong bright and clear, and the forest air filled with the smell of leaves and grasses. She felt markedly improved from the previous night, but she tested herself anyway by moving her arms and legs. To her surprise, there was almost no pain at all, and what remained of her injury seemed to be all but healed. She sat up slowly, looked around, swung her legs out of the bed, and stood. A little bit of dizziness, but otherwise she was fine, save that she was very hungry. She shed her night clothes and put on forest garb, taking her time, listening for Plaisir Porse and hearing nothing. Once dressed again, she slipped from her bedroom and walked out into the main part of the house. The old woman sat at the small kitchen table, sipping liquid from a cup. Without comment, She rose, poured a second cup, and handed it to Tasha.
"Drink it," she ordered.
Tasha drank, frowning.
"This is ale. Ale with herbal medicines to help you heal. You're clearly better, but not yet completely back to yourself. I feel well enough. The medicine you gave me in a good night's sleep did wonders."
The other's long face took on a look of amusement.
"You've been asleep for almost 2 days."
The girl stared at her.
2 days?
No wonder she was so hungry, and no wonder she felt so rested. But 2 days? Without once waking, how could that be? The druid seemed to read her mind.
"The medication I gave you was very strong. The infection needed healing without interruption. That meant you had to sleep for more than a single day. Can you feel how it helped you?"
Tasha nodded.
"I am grateful."
Clizia made a dismissive gesture.
"You must be hungry. Let's get you something to eat. Then I will sew up your wound."
She paused.
"Proper young ladies don't fight with knives."
Tasha grimaced. "It wasn't much of a fight." The old lady nodded.
"I imagine it wasn't."
As she prepared a meal for them, Tasha was surprised to find herself liking Clizia Porse better than when they had first met. In spite of Driska's warning, Clizia appeared to have good intentions toward her. If the old woman had not cleaned and bandaged her infection and given her the healing medicines to drink, it was hard to say how things would have turned out. On the other hand, she was still not convinced that she knew where Clizia's loyalties lay. After all, she had lied to Driska about knowing Kasson, and Tasha felt that, in spite of her kindnesses, Clizia was keeping something back from her. So it might be best if she kept a secret or two of her own for now. While they were eating, Tasha asked again about Driska, and this time Clizia told her what had happened. While the two of them were inside Paranor, attempting to summon the guardian of the keep, Driska had decided at the last minute to go in search of Kasson. On his orders, Clizia had gone ahead, relying on Driska's promise that he would quickly follow, but once she was safely outside, she had witnessed the conjuring of a druid's spell that must have been cast by Driska, and Paranor had disappeared, sent into a limbo existence.
"He has the means to bring himself and the keep back," she finished, giving a perfunctory shrug. "I am certain of that much, if nothing else. But it will not be easy. In the meantime, he is trapped there."
"Is there nothing we can do?" Tasha pressed. Clizia shook her head.
"Nothing of which I am aware. Although..."
She hesitated, as if she had remembered something.
"Driska brought several books of old magic with him when he left the keep and went into exile. I searched for them everywhere but could not find them. There might be something in there that could help him if we just knew where they were hidden."
A whisper of warning surfaced in the back of Tasha's mind.
"Be careful." "I know of the books," she said. "But I think they were still here when I left for Backing Fell. Are you sure they're gone?"
The old woman nodded.
"I've run out of places to look. Maybe someone else has them. But let that go for now. You said you went to Backing Fell in the deep Westland? Whatever for?"
Tasha had been open and above board with Clizia until now, and it was tempting to be so again, but she was bothered about the woman's rather too keen interest in Driska's books of magic. Besides, she had kept the secret of her brother's use of the wish song for so long, she found it easy to do so now.
"My family lives there. I went home to see how they were." "An odd time for a visit all the way back there, when Driska was risking himself at Paranor. Are you not his student, and is he not your mentor?"
Tasha hesitated.
"I am, and he is. For about a month now. I would have gone with him, but he insisted I remain behind. He also insisted I go back to see how my brother was doing. Tavo has been very ill, and Driska knows I'm worried about him."
The sharp old eyes studied her.
"There's more to this story, I suspect, but he can keep until you are stronger. I want to know why Driska took you on as his student. This is very out of character for him, you understand. There must be something rather special about you for him to make an exception."
Tasha smiled.
"I guess he must have thought so. We never discussed it.
She pushed back her plate.
Can we go outside now? I think it might be good for me.
So they cleaned up their dishes and put them away and then left the cottage for a walk. They travelled a couple of miles down the roadway, ambling along companionably. They were a good match this day, the old woman and the still-recovering girl, the former asking questions at every turn, while the latter answered those she didn't object to and slid past the ones she did. It was an odd cat-and-mouse game that Tasha quickly found required cautious navigation. Glazier Porce was no fool, and she knew how to find things out, but the questions she pursued, of family and of magic, were ones Tasha was used to avoiding, and she was able to do so here too. They walked until the sun had moved well past midday before returning, and then Tasha went off to have a nap. She remained in her bedroom for the rest of the afternoon, trying to decide how much more she wanted to reveal and what she was going to do with herself now that Driska was gone. At one point, she wondered what had become of the Highlander Dar-Lee. Had he gone into the keep with Driska? Was he trapped in Lost Paranor too? By bedtime that night, she still had more questions than answers. When Tasha had retired for the night and Glazier Porce was certain she slept, she went out onto the porch and sat in a high-back wicker chair to think things through. While the girl was skillful and practiced at avoiding questions when she did not wish to provide answers, she had nonetheless revealed herself in other ways. Glazier was now in possession of answers she had not known she was looking for. That the girl was hiding something was undeniable. Why she was dissembling was a matter of debate, but the evidence was there. Something was wrong with her family, and she had been hiding it long enough that doing so was second nature. She was also hiding the reason that Driska Ark had taken her on as a student when he had refused to do this for anyone else since leaving Paranor. Glazier was certain it had something to do with a magic she either possessed or could access, but the exact nature of that magic remained unclear. Even without knowing the answers to any of these riddles, the old woman had found out something more important, what she should do about Driska Ark and the Black Elfstone. When the girl spoke of him, she did so with special fervour and respect, with compassion and tenderness. It wasn't overt, but it was there. She cared for the druid, and Glazier was willing to bet he cared for her as well. So if Driska still lived, Tasha Kanin could provide Glazier with the leverage she needed to persuade the druid to do something he clearly would not do otherwise, to use the Black Elf Stone to bring Paranor back into the Four Lands. The trick was in determining how best to present an offer he could not refuse, one that would seem to be the key to his freedom, while at the same time hiding the fact that it would lead him to his doom. After all, she still needed to find a way to rid herself of him. Once she had possession of the Black Elf Stone, she could do this. She was aware suddenly of another presence. A shadowy figure that lacked substance or identity was passing through the trees just beyond the fringe of the clearing and her range of vision. She recognized it as the shadowy movement she had sensed earlier. She sought it out anew with her magic, trying to reveal its identity, but it blocked her efforts, a conscious act that shut her out, almost as if it sensed what she was doing, which meant it had the use of magic. She waited on it, but eventually it disappeared, and the night was empty of everything but what was usually there. She found herself wondering how long she could stay in Driska's house and remain safe from the creatures she now realized were watching her. She shook her head as she rose and went inside. Sleep now. Worry later. Tomorrow would be a big day, for her, for Tasha. When she woke, she would know better what the future held. 13. In the shadow-layered passageways of Paranor, in the gloom of a halfway world, Driska Ark walked alone, wrapped in dark thoughts. All around him, the silence was an intense, suffocating presence. Only the scrape of his boots on the stone flooring and his own measured breathing broke its spell. Time had passed, but it was difficult to know how much. There was nothing by which to measure it. There was no day or night, no full dark or light, no sun or moon. The shadows did not alter, frozen in perpetual twilight and so fixed They might have been painted on the walls and floors of the keep. While Driska moved about the buildings, the courtyards, the towers and the walls, he could feel growing within him the certainty that he was losing ground. Chances were slipping away. Opportunities remained hidden and secretive, and still no solution for escaping his prison had presented itself. Shades knew he had tried to find one. He had tried to use the Black Elf Stone over and over again. He had done everything he could think to do to bring its magic to life. He had willed it to surface. He had threatened and cajoled. He had pictured what it would do if it were triggered, and when that failed, had given himself over to a blind faith and desperate plea that it would do anything at all. And still nothing had happened, and he remained imprisoned. He began to imagine that, like the keep, he was fading away. He could tell he was becoming less substantial, more ephemeral, the longer he remained trapped in this endless limbo. He wondered if eventually he would lose everything that made him who he was, and become a shade that would wander endlessly in search of meaning. It did not feel unlikely. He had kept despair at bay until now, but he was beginning to feel it press against him with inexorable determination, and once it took hold, he knew he was finished. Helplessness was already an insistent presence in his life. He found himself struggling with visions of what might be happening back in the Four Lands. Clizia Porse was free to carry on with her machinations. The Scar were relentlessly foraging deeper into the lands south of Paranor, perhaps preparing to challenge the might of the Federation itself, and Tasha Kanan was searching for her brother with no one to protect her against her own bad judgment. All of it was maddening. That Dar-Lee might have located Tasha and be looking after her as she searched for her brother, since by now it was clear that Driska and Paranor were gone, provided some small consolation, but nothing changed the fact that there was nothing he could do about any of it while he remained trapped within the keep. He slowed for a moment, thinking once more of the archives, wondering for what must have been the thousandth time if there might be something in there that could help him. But he could think of no artifact or talisman or magic that would free him from his prison and return him to the Four Lands other than the Black Elf Stone. His frustration surfaced anew. When he could call upon so many forms of magic to serve him, why couldn't he find a way to call upon this one? What was he missing? He revisited his efforts, every one of them. He took his time, cataloguing and examining each carefully. Was there something he hadn't tried? Was there another summoning spell, another method of conjuring he had failed to remember? Was there something he could do differently? Cogline had seemed to suggest there was, that he was not doing something that was needed to make the magic respond. What was it the old druid had said to him?
It requires something of you to command such magic. It demands a price.
But what sort of price? He looked around, almost expecting to find Cogline watching him in his struggles, thinking perhaps to ask him for more information. But shades rarely helped the living, and when they did it was always in an enigmatic way. They gave hints at solutions, but it was up to the one who needed the answers to unravel them. In any case, there was no sign of his ghostly companion. For the moment, at least, Cogline had chosen to let him reason things through on his own. As if that were possible. His emotions overcame him, frustration, rage, and despair, and tears filled his eyes. His dark face grew darker, and he hunched over as if in pain. For an instant he was overwhelmed. He was never getting out of Paranor. He was never going to find a way to return it, or himself, to the land of the living. He would never see Tasha, or Dar-Lee, or Fade, or even Flink again. He was going to remain trapped within the keep's walls until he simply faded away. He was going to die here. It was this last conclusion that proved intolerable and brought him back to himself. Calm once more, he cast off the negative feelings and began tightening his resolve. There would be no giving up, no quitting, no acceptance of a fate he could not envision for himself. He would simply keep searching for a way out of this prison until he found it. He stared around at the shadowed walls, searching for what he knew was hiding there. An answer to his problems. A way out of the keep. Cogline. There had to be something more the old man could tell him, even if only speaking in riddles.
"But that isn't the only way he can communicate with me,"
Driska realized suddenly. He raced for the stairs leading to the higher floors, heart pounding. The druid histories. Why hadn't he thought of them earlier? All of the long and storied writings of the druids were chronicled there. Surely something about Cogline must be included, and perhaps something about how the Black Elfstone was employed to open the keep while he was imprisoned all those centuries ago. So anxious was he to get there, he slipped twice on his way to the third level, where the histories were stored, barking his shins. All of the despair and depression had dropped away, and while he knew he could not be certain what he would find or how much help it would provide, at least he had a place to begin. The pounding of his boots on the stone energized him, the rhythm urging him to go faster, but he slowed as he reached the third floor, winded and not wanting to get ahead of himself. Before him, lounging in the hallway, he could see the ghost of Cogline waiting for him, an expectant look on his withered face.
"I was curious to see how long it would take you to figure it out."
Driska gave him a look.
"Not all that long, but you could have told me to come here in the first place."
"Life is an education, Driska. It is learned mostly through what you discover on your own, and not through what others tell you."
"So you don't have anything new to reveal, I gather?"
"Not really."
The Shade looked rather more pleased with himself than Driska thought reasonable.
"Why don't you wait out here, then?" the druid suggested. "Stay out from underfoot."
Cogline shrugged and melted into the walls. It was growing annoying to watch him do this, but then it was worse than annoying to have him hanging about when he was of so little help. Driska opened the doors to the office that served the Ardreese and walked over to the curtained wall that hid the books. When he pulled back the covering, there was nothing to be found, only the stone and mortar of the bare wall. Driska stepped back, summoned his magic, placed his hands on the wall, palms flat, and began to murmur softly. Light rose from where his hands moved across the wall's surface, growing steadily in intensity until it was nearly blinding. Then the light pulsed as if expanding, enveloping the druid completely before sharply dying away. In the aftermath of its disappearance, the gloom and shadows closed about once more, and the silence returned. Driska stood quietly, staring at the space the wall had occupied. The wall itself gone. Beyond, a bare room waited, its walls fashioned of materials that few had ever seen. A huge table with 12 chairs dominated the center of the room. Both table and chairs were constructed of finished pieces of timber, with metal enhancements and fastenings, and had an ancient, immutable look to them. But the druid ignored both and walked to the walls. Starting on the right and working his way left, he ran his hands across the smooth surface, palms brushing lightly and moving in circles, as if to scrub clean something the eye couldn't see. It took him a long time to circle the room entirely, and when he was finished, he stepped away and waited. Slowly, the walls began to dissolve. Their surfaces ran like melting ice and faded away, leaving rows of books bound in leather and iron cord, so clean and well-preserved they looked newly made. Everything about the books and the shelves shone and gleamed, the pale light of the half-world to which Driska had been sent catching new brightness. The druid walked around slowly, studying the tomes, pulling out one or two to judge their place in time, and then finally settling on one that recounted the events of the era surrounding Cogline's previous life. He laid the book on the heavy old table, opened it, and began to read. The jolt of expectation he felt at that moment was immeasurable. Hope was at hand. Several hours later it had all but vanished. He had scanned the book from end to end and found no mention of Cogline. In disbelief, he pulled the volumes on either side of the one he'd finished and scanned them as well. Still no mention of Cogline. A fresh wave of frustration swept through him. How could the old man not have been mentioned somewhere? He was a seminal figure in druid lore and in the history of the Four Lands, a failed druid who had survived death to come back when the druids were gone and Paranor had been consigned to limbo by Alanon just before his own demise. He had helped persuade Walker Bo to become the next High Druid and was responsible for urging him to use the Black Elfstone in order... he caught himself, in order to bring Paranor back into the Four Lands. Wait. Maybe he had this wrong. It was Walker Bow who had used the Black Elf Stone and returned Paranor, not Cogline. Cogline had helped to persuade him, but he was a failed druid. Not even a druid at all, really, so would he even be mentioned in the histories? Maybe not. But Walker Bow would. Driska saw it clearly now. That was where he should be looking for an explanation. He was turning back to the histories to begin his search anew, when he felt the scry orb, ever present in his pocket, begin to tingle. He knew without looking it was Clesia Porse. Clesia had waited for what she believed to be a suitably long time before using her scry orb to attempt to contact Driska. She had spent most of the day until then considering what approach she should take to get the druid to do what she wanted. She had woken that morning knowing exactly how she would use Tasha Kanin, but she had waited through most of the day to act. Best not to rush things, best to think them through. It was mid-afternoon and the girl was napping in her bedroom. Clesia had given her tea with a little something added to keep her out of the way while she carried out her plan. The drug she had added to the tea would keep her sleeping for several hours, so there was little reason to worry while she was using the scry orb. The time she required was assured. All this assuming, of course, that Driska Ark was still alive. But she couldn't help thinking that he was. It was an irrational conclusion, given her certainty just days ago that there was no possibility that he could have survived, but she had learned over the years to pay attention to those kinds of premonitions. She gave herself a chance to think through again what she intended to say and how she would say it. She would only get one chance, and it was important that she not make a mistake. It would be easy enough to do so, after all. Driska was no fool. So she waited patiently until she could be certain Tasha was asleep, sitting on the porch and looking out into the sun-streaked trees that allowed her brief glimpses of the surrounding homes, which housed the neighbours she never seemed to see. Her secretive watcher was absent today, off doing whatever it did when it wasn't spying on her. The whole of the forest was filled with birdsong and flashes of brightness, as reflective surfaces caught the sunlight and spun it away again in tiny bursts. Except for the watchers, she liked it here and could have stayed and been comfortable. But once she had Driska and Paranor back, she needed to move ahead with her plans to deal with the scar. How she would do so remained a moving target. But one step led to another, and until you took each step you could not be entirely certain where the next would lead. So when she was certain Tasha slept, she brought out the scry orb and called upon its magic, turning its all-seeing eye on Driska. She wondered belatedly if it could penetrate the veil that enfolded both the druid and Paranor, but she needn't have worried. Within moments of her summoning, he appeared before her very much alive. She allowed herself a quick, pleased smile.
"How nice of you to visit," he said.
His voice was calm enough, but his expression was dark and menacing, and there was weariness visible in his eyes.
"Surprised to see me?" "I want to make a bargain with you," she replied, ignoring the question. "How would you like to get out of there?"
He gave her a doubtful look.
"What mischief are you up to now, Clesia?"
"It appears I was a bit hasty in sending you off in such a rude manner. I should have thought it through better. Perhaps you would like to come back and join me in creating my new druid order? I find I am not quite equal to the task I have set myself."
Now there was merriment in his eyes.
"I would rather crawl across broken glass than help you. But thank you for asking."
"Don't be so hasty. I can't believe you are so anxious to stay locked away in an empty fortress. You could be there for a long time."
"Wasn't that your intention?"
"It was my intention to see you dead. But as I've said, I've reconsidered."
"You shouldn't have bothered. Just because you failed once doesn't mean I'm going to give you a second chance. Find another way to amuse yourself. This conversation is over."
The scry orb went dark. Clesia waited patiently for several minutes before summoning him again. She knew this wouldn't be easy, and she was determined not to let him distract her from her purpose. His face reappeared, bladed and hard.
"I'm busy, Clizia. Trying to get out of here on my own. What is it now?"
"Do you know where I am?" she asked.
Without waiting for his response, she flashed the orb about the entry to his cottage and then settled on herself, sitting in the wicker chair.
"I'm comfortable here."
He took a deep breath.
"I'm happy for you. I liked my previous home better, but as you probably know, someone burned it down. Still, that one's adequate. If you stick around a while, I'll find a way to repay you for looking after it."
"I haven't showed you the new addition. It was added after your departure. It brightens up the place a bit. Your decorating tastes are a bit ordinary, but this helps change that."
She rose and walked into the house, pointing the scry orb's eye ahead of her so that Driska could follow where she was going. She took her time, letting it settle in for him, giving him a chance to figure out what she had done. When she reached Tarsha's bedroom, she was sure he knew what she intended to show him, but she entered anyway so he could see the sleeping girl for himself. She let him have a good look at her young face, white blonde hair sprawled on her pillows, her features relaxed and beautiful as she breathed softly. Then she backed out of the room, closed the door behind him, and turned the orb back on herself.
"She's my guest now. We are becoming great friends. I am keeping her safe and sound for you." She paused. "For the moment."
"She is a child," Driska spit at her, not bothering to hide his disdain. "You walk dangerous ground, Clizia. More dangerous than you know."
The old woman nodded her agreement.
"I expect so, Driska. But great risk sometimes brings great rewards. And I think it might be so in this case. I think maybe she has talent with magic."
Driska stared at her wordlessly.
"About my bargain," she said. "Are you ready to listen?"
"It seems I must. What is it?"
Clizia let him wait a few unnecessary moments.
"Just this. I need you to bring Paranor back into the Four Lands. I need the Black Elf Stone to accomplish this. I don't care if you want to help me or not. I don't care if you don't choose to be a part of the new Druid Order, but I do need Paranor. You can help me with that."
There was a long pause.
"You might remember that you stole the Elfstone from me when you left me to be devoured by the Keep's Guardian. Without it, I can't do a whole lot."
"This is what we both thought, but we were wrong. I took the Elfstone from you, but discovered later that what I really had was a cheap imitation. I don't know how it happened, and I don't care. What matters is that the real Black Elf Stone is still somewhere inside Paranor."
He gave her a look.
"I'm surprised you are telling me this."
"Why shouldn't I tell you? What do I gain if I don't? You remain trapped, but I've lost Paranor. If I ever want access to the Keep again, I need the Black Elf Stone. So there you are, still in the Keep, ready and able to find it and use it. It's worth risking your anger to get you to do so."
She did not want him to gain an advantage over her, even though she was asking for his help. The advantage, she believed, was all hers. She had Tarsha to bargain with, and she was betting that would change things considerably. Whatever the case, he would not be able to resist the prospect of freeing himself, so he would use the Elfstone to do so and bring back Paranor. She waited, but he didn't say anything.
"Do you hear me, Driska? You have the means to free yourself."
There was a funny look on his face.
"Or something bad might happen to my student. You forgot that part."
She shrugged.
"I've made no threats. You can assume what you want."
"Where you are concerned, I'm inclined to assume the worst."
His face was expressionless.
"Tell you what, I'll think about it."
"I wouldn't take too long to do so," she warned. "Things have a way of changing."
"Now you are threatening,"
she smiled.
"If you say so."
Driska nodded.
"Goodbye, Clizia."
Then he was gone, and she was left to ponder what he might do next. Driska gripped the scry orb tightly in his fist and stared off into space. That was unexpected. Clizia asking him to find and use the Black Elf Stone, confessing she didn't have it, insisting she needed him back in the Four Lands, but only to be sure that she got possession of the Black Elf Stone before she killed him, only to be sure he was really dead this time. She would use Tasha to make this happen, use her as a bargaining chip and as a means to weaken him sufficiently to leave him vulnerable to her magic. So what was he going to do? Return himself and Paranor to the Four Lands. It was the obvious choice. But first he had to find a way to make that happen. He had to wake the Elfstone's magic so it would do what it was supposed to do, and so far he hadn't discovered how to do that. But he had to figure it out soon, because Tasha was in real danger, as long as Clizia Porce had her. In all likelihood, the girl didn't even realize how bad her situation was. Clizia was trying to win her over, and this was something she knew how to do when she set her mind to it. He turned back to the druid histories and began searching anew. Somewhere in their pages was the solution to his problem. He pulled the volumes in which the details of Warcabo's life and times were chronicled and began to read. He skipped past the parts devoted to his early life, before the years leading up to his time as a druid, not believing he would find anything useful there. When he reached the sections involving Walker's interactions with Morgan Lee and the elemental quickening, he slowed and studied what was written down. Here, for the first time, Cogline was mentioned. Driska bore down, reading everything there was to read about the old man and Walker that led up to the search for the Black Elfstone, his return from the City of the Stone King to the former site of Paranor, and his attempts to bring back the Druid's Keep from its limbo existence. It was a slow, tedious process, and after dozens of pages he still didn't know why the Black Elfstone would not respond to him. But he stopped reading when he found something else, something of equal importance. He had found a way to save Tasha. 14. Tavo Kanin had been walking for days. How many, he didn't know. Time had lost meaning for him. Everything had lost meaning except his search for Tasha. Since the tavern massacre in that small westland village, he had made it a point to stay away from everyone when not engaged in asking about his sister. Every so often he would find someone who had seen her. Tasha was memorable, the colour of her eyes and hair unusual, and those who had encountered her remembered. Most knew nothing more than from which direction she had come and in which direction she had gone. So he followed along as best he could, picking up just enough scraps of information to be able to continue his search. Until, finally, he found someone who knew something more useful. His source was a man he encountered on a lonely road outside another unfamiliar village he was avoiding while following the steadily disappearing trail Tasha had left in her passing. It had been several days since there had been any new information, and he was still travelling eastward, still tracking along the southern borders of the Myrmidon, where he caught sight of the man approaching. He almost stepped off the roadway, intimidated by the other's clean, well-tended dress and air of confidence. He had endured enough raw looks and rough comments about his own dirty, dishevelled appearance to want to avoid inviting any more. He was afraid of his own temper by now. He knew what he was capable of doing if he became angry or frightened, and he was intent on avoiding any further incidents. But on a whim, he decided not to give way, and continued toward the other traveller until they were face to face. Then he asked the same two questions he had been asking everyone he spoke to. "Have you seen a girl with white blonde hair and lavender eyes?" And when he saw the hesitation in the other's eyes, he felt a surge of excitement and pressed on. "Did she say where she was going?" "Who are you?" the man asked, not unfriendly, but clearly wary. "You don't mean her harm, do you?" Tavo could barely contain himself. "She is my sister," he exclaimed. "I'm searching for her because I think she needs my help. Please, tell me if you know anything." His words were persuasive, and his voice filled with desperation. He was clever, and he knew how to pretend. His skill at deception was improving, and he was paying close attention by now to the advice offered by his friend and companion, Fluken, who was standing just off to one side. "Make him believe," Fluken urged him wordlessly. "Do not anger or frighten him like you did those others. Give him a reason to want to help." So Tavo did as he said, and avoided calling on the magic that roiled within him, eager to be unleashed so that it might crush this stranger and force the words from his dying tongue. Instead, he remained outwardly calm, but concerned in what he believed to be a brotherly way. The stranger looked at him doubtfully.
"You look all done in. I have travelled a long way to find her," Tavo continued when he sensed the hesitation. "I have no credits or means of transportation, but I continue on anyway. I won't let anything stop me. I must find her."
The young man hesitated a moment more, then nodded.
"You look like her. I can see the resemblance. So, yes, I did meet and speak with her maybe a month ago. I gave her food and water, too. She was all alone and looked very tired." "That was kind of you,"
Tavo made a show of gratitude, forcing a smile.
"Do you know where she was going?" "Did she say?"
"She did. To a small village. The name escapes me. North somewhere, in the Westland. I think she was looking for someone."
He shook his head.
"I just can't seem to remember."
"Please take a moment to think about it. Maybe it will come to you. Anything at all will help."
They stood together in silence for long minutes, the man with his head lowered and his eyes fixed on the ground, while Tavo stared at him impatiently. Finally, the man sighed and lifted his head, smiling.
"No use. I just can't seem to remember it."
Tavo was enraged. His face reddened and his neck muscles corded.
"Then I'll help you!"
10 minutes later, he had the answers he wanted. Tasha was headed for the village of Emberon to find a man named Driska Ark. She had not said why she was looking for him. She did not say what she intended to do when she found him. She did not say anything about who he was. Not that it mattered. He would find all that out eventually. What he'd learned was enough to give him a fresh start. He would have thanked the man if he had told him all this willingly. But then maybe he really couldn't remember. In any case, it was too late. The magic of the wish song had destroyed his mind and left him a babbling idiot, standing in the road mumbling and jerking like a puppet hitched to invisible strings. Tavo did not laugh. It wasn't funny. The magic was serious business, and he took it that way. He could use it for anything if he was prepared to accept the consequences, and by now he was. He saw it as necessary, and that was sufficient to give him license to do what he had just done. The man would never be the same, but he had served his purpose. Tavo considered leaving him as he was, but then thought it would be a kindness simply to put an end to him. So he did. A single note, high and haunting, and it was done. He went on alone, completely unaware that his sister was now tracking him as he was tracking her. He would have found it ironic, had he known. He could have stopped where he was and waited for her to catch up to him, but he thought her arrived and settled in Emberon by now, and had no reason to believe anything else. Least of all that she had returned to Backing Fell, had discovered what he had done to their parents and uncle, and had gone off to look for him as a result. He had no reason to know that she was simply trying to help him, and had never intended to abandon him. But maybe it didn't matter. By now he was well past complex, rational thinking, and he could only manage situations as they happened. Being in the moment was simple, uncomplicated, real. He could handle what that required of him, but not much more. Thinking beyond the moment was no longer possible. The trek went on for several more days, taking him along the shores of the Myrmidon and onto the grasslands that spread east toward the distant mountains of the Dragon's Teeth. He wasn't entirely sure where Emberon was, but he took time to ask people now and again so he could continue. Most were happy to provide him with the help he needed. Only one or two turned away. But he let them go. He stole a horse to help him with his search. He didn't have to hurt anyone to take the horse, and so he didn't. He was trying to be good now, or at least to go unnoticed. Fluken walked with him, singing and reciting poetry and offering words of advice. His voice was comforting, his presence reassuring. It was good to have a loyal friend. Fluken was always there for him, and he always would be. When the Elfstones went dark, Brecon Elicidil and Dar-Lee hurried back to their airship, powered up the diapson crystals, and flew south in the direction of the vision the magic had shown them. Neither talked about it. Neither questioned the decision to begin searching. They were simply doing what